saying that we want to put our focus into the future, to the meeting that's coming up tomorrow at 4 o'clock at the ABC Civic Auditorium Room. And I guess you are going to be presenting some information to them at that time, right?
Yes. I don't know if you've told them, you told your audience earlier.
Mm-mm.
I will be presenting, a petition tomorrow with approximately around 400 or so signatures, telling the council that we need more winter shelters and we need to do a temporary banning of the sleeping ban in order to give the homeless people time to, get organized for the debates, which is really crucial. Mm-hmm. And I've asked Sugar, Crone, and the mayor, for time to submit the petition tomorrow on the task force and for us to discuss it. So far, I have not received any telephone call from any one of them, talking to my response. So I don't know whether they're even going to want that on the agenda. However, in all fairness, I talked to a man named Gene, and he told me, that we can do, public input, at least as a minimum, so if they're not allowing me to put that on the agenda, I will certainly bring it up as a public input.
But it should be said. Go ahead.
But, I don't know if Crone or Sugar or Mayor Byers is listening right now, but...
Don't count on it.
Well, I don't know if they are or not, but if they are, I'd just like to tell you, I and a lot of other people have really worked hard, to bring this to the forefront, and just giving me silence on this is, really disheartening, Not that it's not going to stop me from my action, I'm a radical, and I will just go on and on, until, we get to the root of this, So I just don't understand why you don't give me a call and let me know whether I'm going to be on the agenda or not. I think that's a very fair thing, unless I don't have an understanding of what this task force is all about. Maybe I don't.
No,
if I don't, I'd like you guys to give me a call and let me know, where I'm mistaken in all this. So, maybe we can change the structure of the task force if necessary.
Mm.
I don't know.
I think you understand perhaps all too well what's going on.
I don't know.
My reading of it is they have their own agenda, and you're not a part of it, even though you have the voices of 400 citizens, 400 individuals from the streets. All they want to do is they want to sideline you into a 3-minute speech at oral communications, just like the old council did at its major council sessions. Your input is not of interest to them, I think, is what they're saying to us. And I think that's a very serious problem that we're running into here. They have their own agenda, they have their own sense of what they want to do, and I'd love to be proved wrong, Bernard. I mean, maybe I'm taking too negative a view too early, but you didn't just call them today, you called them a couple days ago on this issue, right?
That is right. This is right. This is the second call, to each one. First, I requested that they put that on the agenda, and then I've asked, on the second call, for my petition to also be presented with that discussion. And I still haven't gotten a call. As far as I know, I haven't gotten. I haven't really checked my message machine, whatever. Really,
let's hope there's some sudden last-minute scurries of activity. I mean, I know that Christopher Crone is out of town, but I also know that Mayor Byers is in town, and Keith Sugar, I don't know. He may or may not be in town. But the reality of it is, this is, a key subcommittee or a key task force. I think they have a responsibility to stay in touch with their constituents on this issue. And the question will be, are they doing so? I know that you've been doing great work around this, Bernard. You've been doing a lot of tabling. I guess you've been selling buttons downtown about end the sleeping ban, things of that sort.
Right.
And I know that... you're looking for volunteers to help. Is there a number people can call if they want to help table and get the issue out on the streets?
Yeah, I think they right now, they should call your number.
423-HUFF?
Right now, yeah.
423-4833 then is the number to call if you want to help Bernard and the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom in gathering public sentiment to let the council know that there is really significant determination that what's required here is real winter shelter, real places for people to be able to shelter themselves without threat of arrest, and also the obvious not arresting people for sleeping and suspending that law during at least during the discussion of the camping ban until they come to final decisions about what's going on with the camping ban so that homeless people can be a real part of that debate.
Right, Robert. Let's just continue to tell them.
Thank you, Bernard.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye, audience.
Bye-bye.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. 427-3772 is our phone calling line. And there's another call. Before we take that, I want to remind you, if you want to talk about homelessness, you can call Voices from the Village on Channel 71. It's on now, 7:30 to 8:30. You don't have to have a TV to do it. You don't even have to hear the discussion. You can give them a call. Again, the number is 425-4920. That's Voices from the Village if you want to call them up and be a part of the homelessness discussion. 425-4920. And that'll be going on for the next hour on Channel 71. We have another half hour here. You can still join us in progress at 427-3772. In fact, we may have a call now. That sounds like we do have a call.
Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to know, you know, we supported Neil Coonery, who was really an underdog. And I wanted to know what...
I call him a dog. I don't know about an underdog.
I mean, we could have bought books cheaper at Crown, much cheaper. I'm a homeschooling parent.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of things that were a lot better deals, and we supported the local underdog. What has he written? I'd like to know.
Well, you know, the letters, I will delve into my my white sack to find them. I actually read one of his letters last time. His letter was attacking me and the Don't Sleep Tonight Night protest. As I recall from that letter, he claimed that somebody had urinated on his front, one of his mats, and that I had stood by while this happened. Actually, I saw no such thing. It might well have happened, but I didn't notice it. No one told me about it.
Is this a personal thing of him and you, or is his on the sleeping ban?
Oh, I think he is quite convinced and firm against changing the sleeping ban law, but I think there's also, he has a personal hostility to me, not because of any personal dispute we have, but rather because I've assigned responsibility to him and his store, because when he was mayor, he was an advocate of the sleeping ban. When the next year he helped to pass the downtown sit on the sidewalk, go to jail ordinances, we held massive protests in front of his bookshop because he was on the city council at that time. And there was a lot of tension that developed because of that, but that was 4 years ago, of course. But he hasn't forgotten. He still bars me from Georgiana's Cafe, which is next door to his bookshop, Santa Cruz, even though, hey, I'm not a bad guy. I drink coffee and spend money like the rest of them, you know. But, I mean, what he has said is that he actually was at the Monday meeting of the task force on the homeless, the first really open meeting that they've had on this issue, all Mayor Byers' protestations notwithstanding. And what Coonerty said, he was at the table with the rest of us. We were all sitting around. And he said that he wanted to be sure that the neighborhoods were involved in the process of the discussions. And Chris Crone and Keith Sugar and Mayor Byers all said, sure, that sounds great. Can you give us a list of the neighbors that you want involved? And he said, no, that's your job. And he seemed kind of cranky to me, frankly. I mean, he had some legitimate concerns. I, too, agree that there should be open meetings. But he didn't have, you know, he didn't seem to want to work with a group and getting, you know, a list of associations together. He sort of said, that you should do all this. And he seemed to be trying, essentially, to discredit the task force. And it could be that some people view me as trying to discredit the task force. I'm not trying to do that. But I am saying that it's really important that this process be open. It's really important that this process not be a substitution for real action, for example, for shelter concerns that people have tonight in the middle of the winter. As the freezing weather hits, as the rain hits, where there's only shelter for 20% of people, and the rest of them are running around hiding from the cops. And I think that's a concern that you have, too, caller, as I remember.
Well, the thing that bothers me is we've gotten off the subject really quickly on talking about the sleeping ban and whether to change it or not. We've gotten off the subject about the emergency that exists right this minute during the cold nights for people who often are hungry and are not in the best of health.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to me, I feel like it's being waylaid on purpose. I'm not willing to give the kind of, I allowed some lead time for people to get started and some excuses for the new council members.
Uh-huh.
But the truth is, no one has done or is doing anything about immediate shelter. I think that the sleeping ban is wrong, but I refuse to get involved in whether to rescind the sleeping ban because people can't prioritize. I think that when you're in charge of the welfare of a city and the people therein, you need to prioritize and you need to actually take care of first things first. The first thing, which is really not the sleeping ban, is just where can they get out of the frost?
Uh-huh.
And that's not being done. And you can study this till you're blue, but really study it till spring when it's not a hot issue anymore.
Right.
Or you can really do something. I really want to commend Keith Sugar and Chris Krohn at the very beginning of their tenure as city councilmen. They really tried to do something about this. Now they've been shot down and counseled by the older, wiser council person, Catherine Byers, and they're falling into line. I'm real disappointed about this. All the sore losers are conspiring to keep them in their place. You know, the Sentinels run all kinds of negative letters about Mr. Sugar, and actually, being an attorney, I feel that all three of the councilmen that we elected, and we did not elect Catherine Byers, that all three of the councilmen that we elected should really listen to his counsel. I don't believe he will get them in trouble. He knows the law.
Uh-huh. Well, I agree with you. I mean, I really was very, very heartened with Keith Sugar's actions on December 8th. Though I have to say, and I said this before, none of the council members, including Sugar and Krohn, had a word to say about shelter. I mean, except insofar as if people could create their own shelter by sleeping in their vehicle, or if they were sleeping in some makeshift shelter, they would not be bothered by police wake-ups under the Sugar Amendment, which Krohn seconded and which Byers helped to defeat, the health and safety provision amendment, which said if there's no health and safety problem, don't go after them. But neither Sugar nor Krohn had a word or a peep to say about your issue. The issue, everyone's issue, really, the issue of shelter. And it's interesting because, you know, Sugar in his campaign was saying to me, and he kind of had some friction with me even back then, he was saying, I don't care about the sleeping ban, my first priority is shelter. And I said, well, how about both at the same time, you know? And he agreed that would be good too. But in fact, I haven't heard a word from Sugar or a word from Krohn or a word from Byers, you know, or anybody else, about expanding shelter this winter. And we certainly have brought it to their attention.
Well, you haven't heard a word about it since they were shot down.
No, I didn't hear a word about it even at that council meeting. We requested specifically, four or five of us talked to Keith Sugar the day before the council meeting. We had points 9, 10, and 11, all concerned. And you're feeding back there.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay, you okay?
I just hate feeding back.
No feeding back. You can feed, but you can't feed back.
I'm doing both,
actually. I bet you are.
I'm in a feeding frenzy here and feeding back.
Well, it's a little of this and a little of that. Anyway, no, we presented to Sugar and to Krohn at meetings the day before the council that we felt that Catherine Byers' 6 points had no mention of increased shelter, really. And we asked specifically that particular facilities be opened up, and Sugar, you know, he didn't really respond to that. Krohn did. He said he would bring it up, and he declined to do so. He said when we challenged him later, I thought that Keith brought it up. And you're seeming to say that you thought he brought it up too, but I listened to his tape pretty carefully, and not a word was said about expanding shelter at that meeting. Not a word. I mean, we in the audience, a lot of us, you know, brought that up, but nobody on the council took up the ball on that one. So that's not really a matter of Keith Sugar being shot down by the mayor or by the media.
No, he's been shot down by the press, and he's been shut up.
Well,
you can, in your first few days of office, when everybody tells you you shouldn't have done that, and, you know, your own brothers, basically, in politics, vote against you, it's a pretty hard blow, you know? But I really think that we need to let Catherine Byers know that we expect her to get in line or get out.
Uh-huh.
Just get out of the way. And our own candidates really need to take their power back. And Tim Fitzmaurice needs to stop sitting on the fence. He really needs to start supporting the other candidates, too, and acknowledging that they have some right feelings on this, you know, about human suffering, and quit worrying about neighborhoods also.
What can activists do, Roxanne, to help encourage Tim to take a stand and help encourage
Catherine? Well, I did want to say that you keep encouraging people to call Catherine, but I really think one of the people that we really need to encourage listeners to call is Tim Fitzmaurice.
That's a good idea.
Because of the Brown Act, he's out of the loop. He's not allowed to talk with the other three. This is how they split our candidates' power right away.
Uh-huh.
Catherine inserted herself as part of the committee, and therefore it left one of our candidates, one of our elected officials, out. And he can't talk to them. They can't talk to him about it. Only three councilmen at a time.
Uh-huh.
So this was very clever, as far as I'm concerned. Very, very clever. And unfortunately, you know, we got to give our guys credit. They might have their hearts in the right places, but they are politically naive.
It is true. It is their first term, and Catherine has been there for 10 years. I think your suggestion is a very good one, caller. I think the thing to do is to give a call to 429-3550. Then you're going to have to, unfortunately, wait. I think it's £4, but I'm not sure. So you have to wait to hear the message to see what Tim Fitzmaurice's number is, and then simply key in his box number and tell him, Tim, we need you to stand up on this issue, the issue of winter shelter and the issue of human rights for homeless people.
I think we all need to stand up for people less fortunate. We all need to do that. And I think most of the people, from what I saw when I was downtown in Santa Cruz, talking to people about the sleeping ban, what I saw was that most people didn't know exactly what it meant and were horrified when they found out that people really couldn't sleep safely who were homeless. And the number of people that had come to Santa Cruz and been homeless themselves that were now, like, working in the shops along the mall, I talked to many people who were just sitting out on their break and said, oh, I was homeless when I came here. I think that we need to revise our picture of the homeless. I believe Jillian Greenside's letter said something for the safety of women. She could not, condone the raising of the camping ban. We've seen news articles and on TV reports all the time about homeless people who stop a rape, who stop a beating, who stop a knifing. Then all of a sudden, hey, they're A-okay. You know, they're down by the railroad tracks. They're hiding. They're trying to stay away from the police. And they have stopped some horrendous things. Then they're heroes. Then we give them a job. You know, no one asked you or I to prove ourselves that way. You know, I mean, they're already considered despicable until they do something heroic. And otherwise, they keep being considered despicable.
It's true. There's a separate standard that they use. It's similar to the kind of racism you see against Latinos and blacks, where they have to, you know, there's a natural stereotype, and those who overcome the stereotype are considered commendable, a tribute, a credit to their race, and all this sort of thing. You know, a good homeless person, look at that, you know, as though it's some kind of an anomaly.
Yeah, it's really unusual, and I mean, the stories have been so many. Over the past 2 years, there have been so many of them.
Roxanne, I'm going to invite people to come again tomorrow at 4 o'clock to the task force meeting. It's at 4 o'clock on Friday, And you can come and present this to Mayor Byers, to the two council members, encourage the council members, tell them you really think it was a positive thing that Sugar did on December 8th and standing up for homeless people, that they need to speak out on shelter and they need to act on shelter now. And essentially, they also need to keep these meetings open. I mean, not that that's likely to go bad now. What happened was, what I was saying before your call came in, was that on Monday, the larger focus group meetings, which the homeless activist focus group meeting is coming up next Wednesday, by the way, for those of you who want to be a part of that. That's 2 to 4 on Wednesday the 13th at Loudoun Nelson Center in classroom, in room number 5, I believe it is. Could be room 6, they're not sure. That's a 2-hour meeting. They're holding these longer 2-hour meetings, which they were going to close to the public. That's what I believe, even though Byers tells me otherwise. I'm talking to Santa Cruz Sentinel reporter Daryl Cole. I'm talking to staff member Audrey Jean, the individual who sort of manages all these meetings. It was his understanding that these meetings were closed. And that, you know, to me, they were open because some activists, myself notably and others as well, called up and angrily told her that she would hold those closed meetings over our jailed bodies. They're going to be open meetings. That's what we voted for. We didn't vote for more old guard bullshit. And the meetings were opened. And now we have the focus meetings open, the two-hour meetings, as well as the twice-weekly one-hour meeting. And that's a positive thing. But regarding people's desire to have information around this December 14th and December 17th meetings of the task force that we were not invited to, and that apparently nobody was invited to and nobody knew about, you can either contact me at 423-HUFF to get that information, or it's on file at the city clerk's office and hopefully at the library. They promised me that these materials would also be made available at the library for those folks who can't use the city council offices during the day or during the week. You can also get access to the library, which is now open at those times. And I guess that tomorrow also some of us are going to try to talk to Mayor Byers and see if we can, you know, get her to do something around shelter issues. I think you're going to try to be a part of that too, Roxanne, right?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to encourage anybody that comes to the meetings to get to the bottom line. I'd like to encourage them to keep that task force focused on the more important issue, which is what people are doing right now to get out of the cold, and then the long-term issue, which is raising the sleeping ban. Uh-huh. And because I really think that the raising the sleeping ban is such a loaded gun that, of course, they're carrying that ban or running with it, can study it as long as they want, and ignore the real problem.
Good point. So let's get the shelter issue back on the front burner and give a call to City Council 429-3550. Press the pound key and also specifically address your remarks to Tim Fitzmaurice. He is the really vital third voice here that you can appeal to, even though...
Yeah, I don't see Catherine as the swing vote. I see that we have two problems. You know what I'm saying? There isn't just one swing vote. Someone who's left out of the loop is a problem, too.
Well, I think if Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar stand together, Catherine will have to go with them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that she can't face her constituents if she doesn't, because they were voted in by the landslide majority vote. Unless we're talking about something outrageous or something strange.
Something upper middle class?
Now, perhaps, you know, I mean, Catherine...
Which is the most sinister...
Well, we don't want those dirty people all over town. You know, that is a problem. But
hey, Robert, I'd like to say something before I sign off.
Yes.
And one other thing, I'd like to say two things. I doubt if merchants are listening to this program, because I think Beavis and Butthead are on or something like that. But I would like to admonish and warn merchants who are so against the homeless that we can do to you what we did to Crown Books. And make no mistake about it. We don't have to shop with you. We don't have to bring our children for ice cream cones in your shops. There's a lot of other places to go. We'll make our own damn ice cream. So they better think twice about alienating the will of the people. Because we saw with Crown Books what happened. We've seen with other businesses what happens. And that goes for any... I'm tired of Marie's nasty letters about the beach flat slums. I'm tired of merchants who don't have bathrooms open and blame the homeless for it. You know, downtown is just plain user unfriendly. And I don't mind not going there at all, do you?
I could live without it.
I could live without it. Well, they won't even let you into Georgianne.
The ID building will have me arrested, and of course...
So what they're saying is basically, you know, they don't need our money. They don't like our ideas, and you know what? I don't need their shop.
Hey.
So I really think that they better get with the program and start thinking about... I bet they all go to church. I'll bet that they have children they're raising, and if they're going to raise them as little bigots, and pollute Santa Cruz anyway, you know. Well, they really ought to open a shop somewhere else. Maybe Carmel or somewhere where people are as classy as they are, because I don't know about you, but I live in a community that I think is dedicated to human rights.
The sooner that we get that dedication shown in the legal structure of this town and in real facilities and resources for people, the better.
And any merchant who isn't watching Beavis and Butthead, why don't you call in?
We'll vacate the phone so they can do that.
All right.
Thank you, Roxanne.
Bye-bye.
Well, they don't call her Rough Tongue Roxanne for nothing. Or let's put it this way, I don't call her that for nothing. Yeah, come on, you guys. Let's hear your point of view. Actually, your point of view, I'm sure, will be coming up at tomorrow's task force. For those of you who want to hear some merchants talk, that's going to be at 4 o'clock on Friday in the ABC room of the Civic Auditorium, the task force to examine the camping ban. That's going to be happening. That's the Crone Sugar Buyers Subcommittee. And some of us are going to be asking that shelter be put back on the front burner, to be put back on the agenda both of that meeting and of the city council meeting coming up on Tuesday night, so we can see some real action. I mean, you don't even need to go through this elaborate process. All you need to do is make some instructions to Parks and Rec to open up some areas, to open up a parking structure, and maybe to open up a building. I mean, you'd have to hire a little staff there, get it rolling, but it could have been done. It should have been done. It's long overdue, and Roxanne is really bringing that point forward, I think, really most effectively and appropriately. Similarly, merchants who want to conduct a business-gated, kind of a bigoted gated community here, I think they got the wrong town. I think the town that... They're mistaking us for some other towns. Is that maybe Capitola, maybe Carmel, maybe Beverly Hills? I don't know. But that ain't Santa Cruz, and I think we have to express ourselves real clearly on that. And I think once we do, I think that can, should we say, prompt the better natures of those in the businesses to respond appropriately. I had a whole bunch of clippings that I was going to read here, including... I was going to play some clips. I guess I'll have to put that ahead to Sunday when Bathrobe Spears Broadsides will return. We have a longer show then from 11 to 1:30. Last Sunday we actually had a marathon 3.5-4 hour show because the Little Red Hen didn't show up, the woman who shows up after us. But I'm afraid that we are about to be evicted by that madman from the Green Belt who's just arrived to begin his show. The infamous Uncle Dennis. So I'm going to have to give up my privileged position here until Sunday. And again, I encourage you to come on down to the city council meeting on Tuesday, the 12th. Come on down on the 8th, tomorrow, to the task force meeting of the camping ban at the Civic Center's ABC room. Come on down next Wednesday to the homeless advocates at Loudon Nelson at 2 o'clock. All this stuff is happening. And it needs your voices down there, because it's only the public that eventually they'll listen to if we're loud enough, if we're strong enough, if we're clear enough and persistent enough. And if you have any comments you want to make about this show, and you don't want to make them on the next show, which is about environmental issues that you can act on, and it's important to listen to that show too, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Finally, I want to remind you, Voices from the Village is going to be on for the next half hour. You can call in to them if you want to talk about homelessness. It's a live call-in show, 425-4920. Until next Sunday, I bid you adieu. Stay with us, though, for some good stuff with Uncle Dennis, that is. Thank you.
we're scrambling tonight, aren't we, Robert? I didn't think Robert's tape was going to run out that soon. Oh, well, this is free radio. We're free of all kinds of constraints, including professionalism. We don't have to sound like we're a together radio station because we're really, you know, we're just sort of... Yeah, fumbling and mumbling, you know, our... Yeah, the headsets are taped together. They have to screw the microphone stand down to the table so the programmers won't steal it. And, oh well. Anyway, I want to invite folks to stay tuned for Earth First Radio. All right. Okay, let's see here. Maybe I can, for Earth First Radio, presented by Uncle Dennis on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run. When the job is done, how can we stand by while this all takes place? We got to stop listening to human race. Oh, compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise in the hands of Mother Earth. Mining mountains by the ton, digging up uranium, bald eagle looking for a place to land.
Radio. For those of you who are long-time listeners here, you'll notice that there's a little bit of a format change, and that's due to the fact that this is the premier recording session for a broader Earth First Radio that's going to be sent out to the world. This is Volume 1, Number 1 of the larger Earth First Radio. We plan to put out Earth First Radio on the internet, and we plan to put out Earth First Radio by a tape subscription service. So some of you will be hearing this voice far and wide in the future, and hopefully we can bring the message of no compromise environmentalism to far more people in the world. Let's start off with news from the Headwaters Forest, and the big news today here in California is that the Pacific Lumber Company will not be issued a timber operator's license for 1999. And I want to thank all those folks who called the California Department of Forestry and urged them to do just that. It is good news. But as good as this news is, it should not stop or even necessarily slow down the logging at Pacific Lumber. They will undoubtedly hire more gypo loggers, that is, logging contractors, and then get their local people all worked up about them darn environmentalists that cost them their jobs. The actual fact is that gypos cost Pacific Lumber less since they don't have any benefits and they pay them by the board foot cut. The price that they pay to the gypos means that the gypo logging companies have to cut even faster and they have to cut bigger. The bigger trees that they cut, the more money they make. So this is not exactly good news, folks, but it is good news that at least there is a little bit of backbone at the California Department of Forestry. The headline again, Pacific Lumber will not be issued a timber operator's license for 1999. And in other California news, let's go to the epic update. Environmental Protection Information Service, and they're talking about the Headwaters deal. With all the predictability of a Hollywood sequel, headlines shouting Headwaters deal near collapse are once again sprouting up all over Northern California. The occasion for these repeat performances is once again the massive temper tantrum on the part of Charles Hurwitz, Maxam Corporation, and their allies in the lame duck Wilson administration. The massive volume of public comment against the Headwaters deal included voluminous, well-documented scientific studies on the Habitat Conservation Plan's sustained yield plan. At the heart of the Headwaters agreement, many reputable scientists, several working with EPIC and Sierra Club, raised concerns that the intensive logging detailed in the plan may push coho, salmon, marbled mulets, and other rare creatures over the brink of extinction. Federal law does not allow approval of habitat conservation plans that jeopardize a species' chances of survival and recovery. Clearly, this plan falls into that category, and federal scientists have developed numerous recommendations that they believe would avoid this outcome. Predictably, Hurwitz and company are balking at any provisions requiring less intensive logging and are now demanding that they be compensated for simply bringing their plan into conformance with the most minimal legal requirements under the Endangered Species Act. Negotiations in Washington are on again and off again, and unfortunately now they're going to have to deal not with the outgoing Pete Wilson, but with Gray Davis, who was sworn in a few days ago. Unfortunately, probably everything will come to a screaming halt until Gray Davis gets his boards and appointments over with. That may take several months, but in the meantime, Senate President Pro Temp John Burton is contemplating legislation to rescind the state's $245 million appropriation for Headwaters if the HCP fails to meet standards established by the legislature last year. During a press conference, Senator Burton offered support for the biologists who were insisting that the plan comply with the standards of federal law and sharply criticized former Secretary Wheeler for working on behalf of Maxam. So that's the latest news from Headwaters. And what do you need to do? Well, keep in touch. That's what you need to do. Listen to Earth First Radio, and listen to other news sources and find out what's going on in Headwaters, and then do something about it, okay? Call your senator, call your state representative, call your representative wherever you are and get something done. In other news from Northern California, the State Court of Appeals here on December 3rd reversed an earlier Humboldt County Superior Court decision ruling that two Eel River sawmills logging plans on Gillam Butte should not have been approved by the California Department of Forestry. Last year, EPIC and Friends of Gillam Butte filed a lawsuit challenging CDF's approval of the plans, which would have allowed logging of old-growth Douglas fir and hardwoods near the Bureau of Land Management's Gillam Butte Reserve. The timber harvest plan, clearing the way for Eel River sawmills to cut 122 acres of Douglas fir forest on the Mattole River side of Gillam Butte, was not approved. According to this plan, the proposed logging would have discharged 115 cubic yards of sediment into the Motoa River, a river already listed as water quality impaired by the United States Environmental Protection Agency. Eel Rivers offered to repair a culvert 4 miles downstream in order to mitigate the sediment input and achieve zero net discharge, but the plan failed to account for the obvious impacts to those 4 miles of the Motoa River. The court found that CDF should not have approved the plan in the absence of the analysis. And that's it for the news from EPIC. In other California news, the Pacific Ranger District of the El Dorado National Forest on November 12th published its plans for the Bosworth Forest Health timber sale. The sale immediately north of a very large area of the Cleveland wildfire would remove 11.6 million board feet of timber from 1,165 acre of treated units. The sale uses a combination of extensive thinning, the construction of defensible fuel profile zones, fuel breaks, and small regeneration clear cuts. The stated intention of the timber harvest is to increase fire, insect, and disease resiliency in the stands and increase site productivity through extensive thinning. The defensible fire profile zones are long swaths approximately a quarter mile wide of near clear-cut areas, ostensibly simply to stop the spread of wildfire and to be used in firefighting activities. Treatment of all or a larger portion of the units with prescribed fire was not considered in the district's environmental analysis for the sale because of the longer time period it required. Remarkably, the plan resembles to an enormous degree the prescription provided in the Quincy Library Group bill. For people who aren't familiar, the Quincy Library Group plan was a controversial piece of legislation introduced last year and passed this October, actually a couple of years ago and passed last October, which sets managed prescription cuts on all of the Plumas, Lassen National Forest and One Ranger District of the Tahoe. The plan increases commercial timber harvest through an aggressive five-year program of construction of these defensible fire protection profile zones across the landscape, followed by a transition into extensive thinning with small regeneration harvest clear cuts. The Quincy Library Group plan claims to be a landscape-wide fire and fuels hazard reduction strategy with near fanatical adherence to thinning and 2 to 3 acre clear cuts as a sole means of reducing fuel loading. Fire is virtually excluded from the landscape under the plan were it to actually work. Damage to the ecological attributes under the silvicultural prescriptions is justified more or less as being better than timber stands burning down. Defensible fire profile zones and similar fuel break schemes in their very consistent history of failure are nothing new to the Forest Service in the Sierra Nevada. They had lost a great deal of popularity in recent years, however, until the Quincy Plan came along. Passed last year as a rider to an appropriation bill, the Quincy Plan is currently undergoing a 10-month environmental impact statement process by the Forest Service, and there'll be more about that later. With the sole exception of the 5-year phasing period with its high timber output and fuel break construction strategically placed to accompany thinning, the Bosworth Forest Health Project is more or less a perfect example of implementation of the Quincy prescription. The project is awaiting a decision memo from the Ranger District. If you'd like more information, please have a paper and pencil handy. Here's an address you can write to: Scott Schroeder, Range of Light Ecological Defense, 228 Commercial Street, Suite 174, Nevada City, California, 95959. That address again: Scott Schroeder, Range of Light Ecological Defense, 228 Commercial Street, Suite 174, Nevada City, California, 95959. Or if you want to send some email, send it to scott_s@oro.net. And now for that story on the Quincy Library Group. On December 21st, the Forest Service announced its publication of the Notice of Intent commencing the planning process for the Herger-Feinstein Quincy Library Group Forest Recovery Act, known as the Quincy Bill. There is an unusually brief initial comment period of only 30 days, which means you better get at it. Despite the hard work of conservation groups, this bill passed after being attached to a large appropriation bill in the final minutes of the last congressional session. The bill covers the Sierra Nevada's Plumas, Lassen, and part of the Tahoe National Forest together to make up over 2.5 million acres of publicly owned land. The Forest Service has estimated that the Quincy bill has the potential to result in doubling of logging and tripling of road construction on the three affected national forests. House Republicans have touted the Quincy bill as a potential model for national forest management because it enacts a plan developed by local interests, meaning logging companies, that permits increased logging. The ambiguous nature of the legislation gave conservation groups the opportunity to make sure that the legislation is implemented by the Forest Service in a manner that is consistent with environmental law, that is based on recent scientific information, and that avoids potentially serious environmental consequences. And coming right up is where you need to write, so have a pencil and paper handy. Your company.